And we're live.
Hello, and welcome back to another very special Top 10 episode of the First Time Watchers podcast.
Because we like to watch.
My name is Tim Costa.
This is Walter Vinci.
And those crickets you hear once again is the absence of our beloved Hermano. He is either breastfeeding a baby or placing aloe on a C-section scar. Either way,
that was graphic.
Either way, we will persevere without him. What we like to do on the FTW podcast is find a movie that none of us have seen, watch it together, and then discuss. These movies could be new, they could be old, or something that is on all of our lists of shame. However, in this episode, we will be discussing our top 10 movies of 2012.
You know, you've been waiting for this.
Yeah, I do feel bad that Hermano was
here. I wish he was here.
Yeah.
I mean, he does have higher duties.
And we will be able to revisit this in a future episode. Wally, was there anything you'd like to mention about this past year before we get started?
This year? I actually had to go back at the end of this year and actually go back and rewatch movies that I was like, all right, what did I see that actually came out in 2012? I tend to watch a lot more DVDs. Nowadays, I tend to go to the movies more. But if we're not watching something that is actually out in theaters around us, I tend to watch DVDs. Mm-hmm. So I gotta make sure that the stuff on my list actually was released in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And this year was kind of chock full of movies that all could be potential contenders. So I was pretty happy with this year.
Yeah. I thought. This year was relatively strong. You know, it started out pretty good. It kind of waned in the summertime, I think, especially with some disappointments.
Yeah, there were a couple of disappointments.
I mean, disappointments of movies that got pushed back, like the G.I. Joe movie. We were disappointed. And even though the reviews now for Gangster Squad are pretty bad.
Yeah, it's still like a 37% on Rotten Tomatoes. And that was one of my picks of like anticipated movies.
It was pushed back, you know, due to some reshoots and some events that happened in the world. Was there anything else you want to mention?
There was a couple of surprises that I saw that were released in 2012. One of which is an honorable mention on my list. We'll get to the end and I get my honorable mentions. Other than that, it was really hard for me to come up with a top 10. Like, I had to qualify my top 10 with, what did this leave me with?
Uh-huh.
Did it make me think about anything different? Did it make me view anything differently?
Yeah.
What did it leave me thinking about after I left the theater?
Yeah.
And so that's what really populated my 2000 best of 2012 list.
Yeah. Same thing here. I found that 6 out of my top 10 are original movies, you know, not based on previous material. And 5 of them, I think, were really not that huge box office hits. So
yeah, a majority of my movies are actually smaller productions.
Yeah.
That were released, and as you know, I was like, wow, it's kind of surprised to see that.
Yeah, is there a way that you cultivate and list your top 10?
Yeah, my top 10, just like last year when we did this, I have my top 3, and then my remaining 7 are in no particular order, because after my top 3 movies,
which way you were definitely able to,
I'm definitely able to figure out my top 3 movies. I'm like, okay. I think these are the 3 movies I saw this year that I think are the best movies that I've seen. And anything after that, it's really hard to...
So number 1 is clear, number 1,
number 1,
number 2.
Number 1, 2, and 3 are clear.
Okay.
In fact, my number 2 movie, when we get to it, was actually my number 1 for the majority of the year. Until I saw my number 1 movie.
Interesting.
So that was really interesting.
That's cool. Very good. So, should we get to it?
Let's get to it!
Wally, you're number 10.
Girl Walk All Day!
Girl Walk All Day.
Which we talked about for the Zero Dark 30 episode.
Yep.
After seeing this movie, I said, this is top 10 material right here, because I'm going to end up owning it. This movie is just fun. Mm-hmm. It's lighthearted. It makes me happy. I had a smile. I love the music. I love the dancing in it. It just left me with a big smile on my face the entire time. This movie, certainly worthy of the top 10 of 2012. It's just a nice foray into it.
That's cool. I can see it. Definitely worthy. I enjoyed that movie as well. My number 10, I thought was a lot of fun as well. And I had a blast watching it because it's pretty much a live action cartoon. And what that was is Premium Rush. Starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Michael Shannon, I thought, played and hammed up a bad guy really, really well. As much as you want a cartoon bad guy to be, this whole movie is a cartoon. It's the main character played by Justin Gordon-Levitt, his name is Wiley,
yeah.
and all they do is just These bike messengers, riding bikes all throughout the streets of New York. I think it's a great testament to life in New York. I don't live in New York City, so I don't know what life in New York City is, so I shouldn't say that. But it makes it appear that just the hecticness of New York City, of course, once again, it's a big cartoon. Everything is over the top in this movie, but I had a blast. I really enjoyed watching this.
And this movie was a lot of fun to watch. I
You didn't give
couldn't.
it very high
I didn't give it
marks.
very. I mean, it was fun to watch. I liked what they were doing. I just wish they had pushed it just a little bit further. They could have gone another extra, maybe half a step,
I love that.
really made something.
It's possible. It just cracked my top 10, so I think, of course, there could have been things to improve it a little bit more, but I enjoyed it for what it was. Wally, you're number nine.
John dies at the end. This movie I saw a trailer for, and I talked about it in a previous podcast. It starts off with a great question. So you have a body and you're hacking it apart with an axe. And in the process of hacking this body apart, and that's because the guy keeps coming back to life. You cut off his head with an axe, right? And in the process, you break the handle. And then you take it to the hardware store, you explain to the hardware guy exactly what happened, that you were chopping vegetables or something, and that's what happened. And he gives you another handle. And then you're in the kitchen, and then you see a slug monster, and you chop it with the axe, and it breaks the bit. So you go back to the hardware store, and you explain to him that you were again chopping vegetables, which is why there's blood all over the place. And he gives you another bit. So now you have this brand new axe with a brand new handle and a brand new bit. A 1 year later, you hear a knock at the door, and the guy you beheaded is at the door, and the first thing he says is, "That's the axe that killed me." Is he right? That right there set the tone for this movie. This movie is awesome. It is like one crazy episode of Supernatural. These two guys basically are on this stuff called the soy sauce, and it allows you to cross time and dimension and to see across time and dimension. So you can see things that other people can't. And it's them trying to stop an otherworldly menace from destroying the Earth. And even when the credits are rolling, there's like another like potential for like a sequel, and I really hope that they make one because it's like they're playing basketball and there's a portal. Like, oh, look at the portal. And they're like these like space cops that show up and they're like, oh, fuck this. And they leave. So yeah, John dies at the end.
Okay, very good. My number nine is a movie I know you guys do not enjoy, and that's The Cabin in the Woods.
This is a movie I need to rewatch, actually.
I give you a lot of credit for you saying that, because it's definitely a movie that you can watch over and over again and probably catch more things.
Well, I think the reason why is that this movie was originally marketed to me by via the trailers as a horror movie, and it is.
It's a hot comedy. It's a
It's
horror
it, it
comedy.
yeah, and hearing the more reviews I hear about The Cabin in the Woods, I mean, I'll let you finish. I'll bring up my
Well,
thoughts.
no, I just really enjoy this. Written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, and directed by Drew Goddard. This is a testament to old horror films that people of our generation grew up on, and all the cliches of those horror films, and really turning it on its head and presenting something new and fascinating. I found it one of the smarter movies of the year. I found it incredibly fun and funny. I love the opening, and especially the opening title drop with shit, what's his name? Bradley Whitford and Richard
I love
Jenkins,
that part.
just telling a joke, talking about their office life, and then telling a joke, and then cutting the laughter, and in the middle of the laughter, the title drops all over the whole
Yep.
screen. That was hilarious, and that it just continues on from there with just the it's a very meta movie. I will say, though, the ending, it seems like maybe they didn't know how to end the movie, although I think that the ending can be taken as a criticism of the industry and the consumers alike of those horror movies. I give a lot of credit to what they did with The Cabin in the Woods. That's my
Yeah,
number nine.
it didn't make my top 10. I need to rewatch it. I was hoping I could rewatch it before we did the list because I've heard so many reviews about this, and I go, I need to watch this with a different eye. And I think if I watch it with a different eye and see it as a deconstruction and see what they're actually doing, I think I'll appreciate this movie more than when I first went to see it. So this is going to be it's probably going to be mentioned on a future podcast as a yay or nay, or a nay, 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 revisit.
Yes.
Next up for me. Sleepless Night.
Oh, very nice.
This movie I really liked. A single location movie set in a nightclub about a father trying to get his son back from drug dealers and everything he goes through in order to get his child back. And I can hear Hermano screaming at me from a distance, just shaking his fist, going, "Damn you, Wally!"
Well, he may damn me sometime later.
So this movie, yeah, this movie, I was involved in it from the very beginning. I love the guy's plans and how like he's constantly thinking on his feet and how the easy way out for him is closed off just by by chance,
Yes.
and he has to find other ways to get his kid back and just the lengths that he goes through to get his child back. And I'm also a really big fan of single location movies, like when you have one place and you don't ever have to leave. You know what I mean? And this writer director made this entire world the club. And this right here belongs on it belongs in the top 10.
You may hear about this later on. Okay, so my number eight is Argo. Ben Affleck once again continues to impress me with his early in his directorial career. He recreates these events with a lot of creative license, but still very creatively and effectively, I think. It's a good dramatization of that. A CIA Canadian, secret operation to extract some American diplomats, and it's very well done. It's well written. It's very tense throughout. It does get a little manipulative at the end, with how much could go wrong, towards the end. But still, it didn't stop me from enjoying this and how well constructed this movie was. I still wish that he chose a different actor to play his role.
Average, incredibly handsome main character.
Yeah, who played a Hispanic guy,
Exactly.
I mean,
Tony Mendez.
Mendes, and you see the pictures of him at the end.
I'm like, these look anything like Ben Affleck.
Nothing.
He must be, you know, if I were Tony Mendez like in real life, I'd just be like, yeah, that's me. That's what I looked like when I was younger. I was tall and handsome and white.
And you're gonna hear this about this in our next episode, but Alan Arkin was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in this movie. I don't know about that because his role is just reserved for the comedic elements in this movie. There's a lot of levity that are left to Alan Arkin and John Goodman when they're communicating back in the States and trying to get everything set up and also during the mission. So, however, you know what? Now thinking about it, about talking about the manipulation and some of the stuff that kind of does harken back to those old Hollywood movies of the 70s and 80s, in which this is emulating. It's clearly emulating right from the start. The opening a Warner Brothers logo. The old
The
Warner
old
Brothers
school,
logo.
yep.
So maybe it's also a testament to the old, the spy thrillers of old.
Yeah, they kept its flavor.
Yeah, it did. So that's my number eight, Argo.
Right on. Next up for me was The Raid Redemption. This one, for whatever reason, like I kept thinking maybe it came out in 2011, but no, it came out
Well, it
well,
did
here in the States
overseas.
in 2012.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, it's a really straightforward story. You've got a squad of police, SWAT team officers have to storm a building and get to the top floor to, get the bad guy. And, they get surprised, they get ambushed, and it's left to a small handful of guys to, bring the villain to justice. And you have your main character, played by, his last name is Uwais. I can't think of his first name. He's also the lead in Merrintow.
Eco-wise.
Iko Uwais, and he's also the lead in Merrintow. And basically, he takes it upon himself. Like he sees his friends and other guys that he works with on the squad, get killed, and he takes it upon himself. Like I'm going to bring this man to justice. Like by hook or by crook, live or die, I'm taking this guy down. And the opening shootout scene when everything goes south is one of the craziest things I've ever seen in movies.
It's very intense.
It's
Just the
incredibly
way the
intense.
camera's held and shakes,
And
it's shaken in a way that you don't see in many movies or any other movie, really. I don't know. It's just this really tense ultra shake, but not over. I don't know. It's hard to describe.
I this opening action sequence is just it is literally balls to the wall. Like people, they're being assaulted on all sides. They barricade themselves in, a room. One guy breaks through. One guy grabs another guy who breaks in, just runs him and throws him out a window. Another guy's chopping holes in the floor so they can get out of there.
I have a feeling there's going to be a movie on your list later on that's going to follow pretty much the same premise as this.
No.
No? Are you sure?
Surprisingly, yeah, surprisingly not. It's
Okay.
not.
Anyways.
But yeah, the raid. It's if you like action movies,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, you're gonna want to see this.
Yeah, well, once again, a lot of people when this first came out said, this is action nonstop, nonstop, it doesn't
No,
stop. Not true.
it's
It
got
has
pauses
pause.
in it. It's got pauses in it. But if you want
It
like
lets you breathe.
some really great, like really well done, like fight sequence where you can actually see everything that's going on, and
Yeah.
it's not all shaky cam and knees and elbows,
That.
and you want to watch this guy who's a fantastic Penjat Salak fighter.
Yeah.
Just fight.
There's this one scene where he drops somebody onto the edge of a door, a
Yep.
broken door, and the camera follows that motion.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yeah,
Probably one of the best shots I've seen this year.
and actually one of the this one movie also left me with a there's a fight scene between two other characters that actually had me out like just like squeezing like the armrests of my chair where these two guys are fighting hand to hand and one character is obviously gonna is gonna die and you see him just like at the like using what little strength he has left to fight for his life before he gets killed. And I was like, ah, listen. So, yeah.
I heard that the sequel is going to take place 2 hours after this one.
I hope so,
Yeah.
because this, I mean, I hope it's got the same kind of cast, because this movie was badass. The Raid, Redemption.
Agreed. So my number seven is Skyfall, latest James Bond movie. This movie was pretty freaking incredible. It shows the vulnerability of James Bond and how it gives him a human quality, and a lot of other Bond movies don't do that because he's just a superhuman, I think that it kind of continues on, the tradition of the first two Daniel Craig Bond movies and showing his humanity, but in this movie they show his physical vulnerability. In the other movies they showed more of his emotional vulnerability. In this one his physical abilities are tested and retested, and he's pitted up against a great villain in Javier Bardem, who channels a lot of other famous villains, like from The Joker and I should say Christopher Nolan's Joker,
Yeah.
and played by Heath Ledger, and even some other Bond villains like Jaws, the just how physically, and it's pretty funny the sexual innuendos that go on between Javier Bardem and Daniel Craig, and I did like all the female leads, in this, even though one of them is kind of just left to rot, if you will. But yeah, the action scenes, it's beautifully shot. The cinematography in this is amazing. Sam Mendes really brings a good quality to this movie. Once again, the ending, I have to say, is similar to Argo in its manipulation. Not nearly as manipulative as Argo, but I think it could have been executed a little bit differently, a little bit better. But ultimately, it's pretty good, and I'm really excited to see where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, this movie actually got me like the James Bond series again. I didn't want like the first two. Then Skyfall came out. I was like, "Hell's yeah, I'm back on board."
Very good.
But did not make my top 10 though.
Really?
Sticking, yeah, I'm sticking with the theme here.
Wow. Okay. You're number six.
Number six, Goon.
Oh.
I love hockey. You've got or what's his name?
Sean William Scott.
Sean William Scott in it as. Kind of, he's a hockey fan. He's a bouncer at a bar. Goes to a game with his friend, and when you're at a hockey game, you heckle the other team. And these guys are heckling like AHL type players. One of them comes in the stands and tries to pick a fight with Sean William Scott, and he lays him out in one punch. And everyone sees this, and he's not really a hockey player, but the team needs an enforcer to get the big guys out of the game. And there's one other major enforcer that's on his way out, and he sees what Sean William Scott's been up to, and basically, they're not. He's an antagonist, but he's not the bad guy. He's basically he's doing the same thing that Sean William Scott's doing. He's like, He basically, and even they even have an exchange where they meet in a diner, and he says, "You really think about what you need to do afterwards, because once you leave the game, what else are you gonna have?" And it culminates in a great final confrontation between like the young and the old, and just what they're willing to they're both willing to give it. Because the crowd is anticipating like a brawl between these two guys. Like, they want to see it, and finally when they get it, you just see exactly just how much they're willing to give to for themselves, and just so they can walk away with something for themselves. And the movie is just great. It's got a lot of heart to it. It's hockey, and I love hockey. Like
Yeah, this is a
the
movie.
side characters are great. His best friend in the movie is a little annoying.
Evan Goldberg?
Yeah,
Or Jay
but
Baruchel?
let's see what he looks like on an IMDb. I could tell you. Yeah, Pat. His friend there is a little way over the top, like kind of grating and annoying. But the rest of the characters, like the goalie and the other players on the team, these guys are all great. And the movie is just it's really heartfelt, and
This is a movie I had meant to catch up on. It's on Netflix Instant right now, so I've had the ability to, but I just haven't had the time to be able to catch up on it. So I'll have to watch it soon. Okay, so my number six is The Avengers,
there you go.
another Joss Whedon movie that it's incredible. Another movie that it's incredible what they're able to pull off. Just the culmination of the previous five movies leading up to this and having it work so perfectly and so brilliantly. The chemistry between all the leads, the writing to be able to have them interact and all their stories to interweave and all their especially in the end with the fighting, the battle in New York, just amazing, and Joss Whedon really brought something to the table here with his own geek sensibilities, but also there's plenty for the mass. So obviously, it's the second highest grossing movie of all time, So he obviously brought a lot to the mass audiences to appreciate because there's so much action in this movie. Once again, I don't understand what Hermano has said about the opening action sequence, how he didn't find it thrilling or anything like that. I found it completely thrilling. I really
See,
enjoyed
I
it.
found the opening action is just a little clunky.
Huh.
Like after he gets past that initial clunky like start, it takes off.
Yeah, it really does. I have a lot of high praise for the Avengers. It's quite the accomplishment.
Now you've got two Joss Whedon movies in your top 10. Imagine being the Fox executives who canceled Firefly, and they're looking at this going, "What the hell?" I hope someone's learning a valuable lesson from
You
this.
know what? If I don't know, maybe that's what makes Firefly so good in retrospect, because it gives it that it keeps that cult quality to it,
It does, but I mean the writing in that show is fantastic, and the characters are all great. I wish it was still on, but c'est
I'm
la
sure a
vie.
lot of people
C'est la
wish
vie.
that. Okay, Wally, number five.
Looper.
Okay.
This movie is pretty freaking cool.
Yep.
It takes time, the concept of time travel, and rather than focus on the actual time travel science and all that, it basically says you can travel through time. That's all you really need to know. And stories that move in such a fashion that's very circular, when you see like exactly where the story is going and what Bruce Willis's motivations are, what Joseph Gordon-Levitt's motivations are as their, point and countering point to what they have to do, what they're both what you know what their character missions are in the movie. This movie is really, really well done. It presents some pretty horrific stuff too, as far as time travel wise goes. When you see at the beginning of the movie what happens to someone who misses a target, what they do to them, with the messages being written on them, and just all that other stuff. We've talked about this movie before in our review, so you can go back and listen to that podcast about this movie. But this movie is excellent, and you should also go see it.
Agreed. Okay, so my number five is something that you've already mentioned, that's Sleepless Night.
There you go.
So yeah, I agree with you, and I feel the ghost of Hermano punching me in the back of the head right now. But yeah, I like you. I'm gonna be repeating a lot of what you said earlier. This movie's intense. It's a great use of single shot location, and you had informed me during our episode of this of this review that they filmed this in several different
Several different
locations,
locations and
and it's
splice it
amazing
together.
how they stitch it together to make it look like one location.
Yep.
Because I had praised its ability to make you understand the geography of the and the layout of the nightclub that it's in, and you would never have known that it's filmed in separate locations. Very well done. I love the leads in this. There's some great twists as it goes on. You're always wondering how is he going to get out of these situations, you know, especially when he's in the office of the boss, you know, the drug boss and the owner of the nightclub, and he's with the African drug lords, you know, and you're like, how the hell does he talk himself out of this situation? Because he has a bag full of stuff that he needs to get away with, you
Yeah,
know, and
exactly.
just intense. And then the fight scenes are really well done. There's moments to pause, like in the stairwells that he uses to escape to.
And it fixes wounds.
Yeah,
Pretty painful looking.
and then the kitchen fight scene with that other cop, that is just so brutal and intense. And then Hermano kept complaining about how many drawers can you pull out? Obviously a lot in order to protect
As
yourself.
many as you need to until you run out of drawers.
Yes, that actually kind of reminded me of Die Hard, in which he's McClane is under the table and the guy is shooting from
And
above the
he
table.
keeps running out.
Ah, no more
One more
table.
table. I'm like, oh. No more drawers. Well, then do something else now.
So it's really a great, intense, visceral movie that is worthy of my top 10, which is, so it's at my number 5. Well, your number 4.
Number four is a movie that took a couple. I've watched it several times since it came out, and it never stops being good for me, even though this movie was horribly mismarketed when it came out in January. And that is The Gray, starring Liam Neeson and a number of other. It's kind of an ensemble cast of sorts.
Dermot Mulroney.
Dermot Mulroney's in it. This movie was billed, well, it was trailered as being,
Man fights wolves.
Liam Neeson fighting wolves and just, a story about these guys like fighting off like, wolves in the wilderness and like, kind of like an action movie, and it's not. It is a treatise on life and death and what it means to live, what it means to die, and what it means to fight for yourself. You have Liam Neeson, who's a character who's basically given up on life, and as the movie progresses, he gets his fight back. Like I'm not going down this way. I'm going out on my own terms now. And there's a poem that shows up that his father wrote that's recited a couple times through the course of the movie, and then at the climactic end of the movie, it's recited one more time. And if you're in the right mind, this movie can be a little grim at times because what's going on and what's happening to these characters. You should seriously watch this. Watch it in a way. Watch it when you're not disturbed. When you're not gonna have like people calling you or have to get up to
Yeah, it requires
like
a devoted
yeah,
attention.
you're gonna want to sit down and just watch this movie and just take it all in, and you won't be disappointed. The Gray.
Yeah, a lot of praise for this movie, rightfully so, although it didn't crack my top 10, and I don't think it would make an honorable mention for me, although it is well executed. It's a good choice. All right, my number 4 is Moonrise Kingdom.
There you go.
I think this is the culmination of a Wes Anderson's work. You know, he's a very stylistic director. And there are films of his that I really haven't cared for that much, like the Steve Zissou movie. I just couldn't even get through. I thought it was way overly stylized, and that just disrupted any plot or message of the movie. One of his first movies, Rushmore, a lot of you know. starting to brim with his style, you know, and you know, young Jason Schwartzman in that, and there's you know, some good elements, but not. I think I had given a meh when I did my that on Yay Nay. But this movie is wonderful. It's just wonderful because it takes the very best of Wes Anderson and leaves out the worst, I think. Especially after the Fantastic Mr. Fox, you know, which I think he used.
I adore that movie.
Yes, I do too. He used elements of that movie, especially the framing that he used in Moonrise Kingdom. I had seen starts of it in the Fantastic Mr. Fox. I think it helped because it was a stop motion movie, in which he was kind of forced to do that. But in Moonrise Kingdom, he was able to use that same cinematography for live action. And I had started off when we reviewed that movie. I had started off the podcast by saying it was perfectly framed.
It is
Because this movie is perfectly
perfectly framed.
framed, because it gives you every single layer. There's so many layers, literal layers to this film, in which it's not just a foreground, a middle ground, and a background. There's also layers between those three grounds, if you will. And it just adds so much richness to an already emotional story. You know, a very touching story of these young kids. Falling in love, you know, or young love, if you will, and trying to be more grown up than what they actually are, and the actual grown ups are actually more childlike than they actually than they are, you know, and well, very well cast, very well. This movie is a treat.
It is.
It's
This movie is a treat. It just missed my top 10
yeah.
by like a narrow margin. But yeah, this movie is fantastic. I was happy to have seen it, and
Yeah, and you had recommended it to
I
us
recommend it to you guys
for us to
as
review,
a review.
and very well done so. So that's number four, Moonrise Kingdom. Wally, number
Now we're
three.
in the top three. This is where all the marbles are, baby. We're gonna start with dun 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 dun
Oh
dun doo
no.
doo 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 doo. Number three is Hitchcock.
Oh my God.
This movie, as a man who makes movies and writes movies and wants to direct movies, this movie struck a chord with me. I had a smile on my face from ear to ear. And it made me want to grab my camera and go out and make something immediately after seeing it. I know that Anthony
Hopkins.
Hopkins took a lot of flack for his portrayal of Alfred Hitchcock in this movie, but this movie, I was grinning from ear to ear. The making of Psycho, and just what if I mean. If this is, exactly how like Hitchcock thinks or whatever, I can get behind all of it, where he says, "I want you to buy all the copies of Psycho off all the bookshelves in the United States because I don't want anybody knowing how this ends." He sends out his guys to do that, and he's just very like, "I'm gonna make this movie," and the Hollywood board is like, "No, you're not," and he's like, "I'm making this movie, whether you like it or not. I'm going to make this movie. I feel this strongly about it. This is the movie that I want to make." And his relationship with his wife, the movie's just, I was just so happy to have seen it. I had a grin from ear to ear the entire time. I was, bouncing in my seat at some points, and the movie, it's excellent. I love this movie. This is why it's in my top three. I can't gush enough about it. So Hitchcock is three.
Fair enough. My number three is something not another movie you've talked about already, and that's Looper.
There you go.
You know, talk about the mark. You know, the when the marketing for this movie and the trailers came out, I was like, "You're putting Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Bruce Willis in the same movie? Oh my God!"
At that point,
It's
you need to change your pants.
certainly. However, I will say Bruce Willis is probably the weakest point of this movie. I don't think he brought his A material. That did not stop me from loving this movie because it's a wonderful treatment of the sci-fi genre mixed with a Western, mixed with film noir a little bit. The Ryan Johnson takes a lot of time to make to create and
Takes a
make a
lot of
movie.
time.
and with his previous two works, you can see why he takes his time, because his execution is brilliant, especially in this movie. There's time travel is a very touchy subject
Yes.
to cover, and there's no such thing as a perfect time travel movie, because you'll always be able to find flaws with it, with the time travel itself. But if you create a movie like this that you're able to overlook any of those flaws, you're doing something good.
Andy, well, they even say it like in the dining scene. The diner scene was like, if I try to tell them how it works, we're going to be here all day and
Drawing on
start drawing
napkins.
on napkins and building things out of straws.
Yes. So it's meta as well, in that scene and a few other scenes. Like you had said, the scenes of there's a horrific scene of somebody disappearing before your eyes,
Yep.
which is just breathtaking. Then halfway through the movie, it turns into a different movie, and there's well, I won't even say what else it's like, what other movie it's like, but if you listen to our podcast about it with spoilers, you'll understand what I'm talking about. So this is a very, very good movie, and worthy of my number three, and that's Looper. Well, your number two.
My number two actually has the number seven in it for Seven Psychopaths, which was my number one movie almost all year since I've seen it. It had remained at the top, and I had not seen anything. I didn't think anything was gonna take over. Seven Psychopaths being my number one movie. This movie was just a lot of just so much fun to watch. Sam Rockwell, I wish he'd been nominated for Best Actor because he steals the show in this movie. Every single time he shows up, it's just fun to watch.
Well, is because he's funny?
He's funny, he's witty. He said he I mean
But just being funny, is that worthy of best actor?
yeah,
Or
because
best supporting actor?
he like you see well, have you seen the movie yet? There's a plot point which I'm not going to get into that involves Sam Rockwell, and but you also see like just how much he cares about his friend Colin Farrell. And like he does these things that piss off Colin Farrell, but he's when you realize as the movie progresses, he's doing it because he cares. He's that friend that, I can't, why do you hang out with this guy? You know what I mean? But you realize why, Colin Farrell, hangs out with him. Christopher Walken is great in it. He's got a nifty, backstory as well. Yeah, this movie is just a lot of fun to watch.
I've heard some complaints about the end.
No, the end totally makes
It
sense.
makes
It
sense to you?
all comes together really well at the end.
Yeah. I don't know. Just the marketing of this movie just really annoyed me.
Yeah, don't let that stop you.
I'll have to
Give
give it a
it a
chance.
shot. It was my number one, for most of the year.
Well.
Seven Psychopaths, number two.
All right. So my number two is something that's going to give me a lot of flack on this podcast.
Oh boy.
And that is Haywire by Steven Soderbergh.
What?
Yes. I do not understand why people don't like this movie.
Cause not good.
It only has a 5.9 on IMDb, on users, and a Metascore of 67. But when I was getting ready to see this movie, I know that the two of you, Wally and Hermano, had seen it before I did.
Yes.
And you both had complained. You had said, "This movie is no good. Don't bother seeing it." And I'm like, "Oh, great. I'm really anxious to see this. I'm going to go see it." I go watch it with my best friend. And as soon as the movie ends, we turn to each other. And I'm like, "This movie is fucking awesome. I don't know what you guys are talking about."
I'm wondering if you went to go see another movie.
No, I did not see another movie. I've seen it two times this year. I own it.
Did they give you the right DVD?
They gave me the right Blu-ray. This movie is incredible. It is completely underrated, because it's a great take on the action spy genre. It's not Gina Carano kicks major ass in this movie. She's not the best actor, but everything else in it, in my opinion, just really overcomes her acting abilities, and upon a second viewing, it's not nearly as noticeable in the first viewing. Soderbergh films these action scenes with such beauty in a way that you can see everything. A lot of modern action movies these days, you can't see half the shit that's going
No, it's
on.
all shaky cam and knees and
In this
elbows.
one, it's just still. It follows the action on a pivot and not in motion. And it's choreographed beautifully. The fight scene between her and Michael Fassbender is awesome. There is dark humor in this movie, especially in the end, a scene in which on the beach in which you guys complained about, I think is darkly humorous upon repeat viewing. And ultimately, the reason for everything that goes on here is so petty, and which makes it even more ridiculously awesome. And it's not really that much tongue in cheek. There's a lot of seriousness going on, but there's an undertone of dark humor in this movie, especially in a scene in which she's driving somebody else's car with that person in the passenger seat, and something happens out of the blue. You're like, "What the hell is this?" And that's amazing. I don't know what people were complaining about this movie. Until recently, this was my number one movie of the year, and this is incredible, I think. People need to give it a second watch. And that's Haywire, my number two. Wally, it's time for your number one.
All right, well, before I go on my number one, let's recount the top nine up to this point.
Okay.
We've got Girl Walk All Day. We've got John Dies at the End, Sleepless Night, Raid, Goon, Looper, The Gray, Hitchcock, Seven Psychopaths, and As It Goes with God, Life of Pi is my number one movie of the year.
Oh.
This movie blew me the fuck away after I saw it. I was agape. I have to see this movie again. I must own this movie.
Huh.
This movie is so good. I don't cry at movies, but I was like, at this movie, I'm sitting there going, if I actually cried in movies, I'd probably be like just in tears at this point.
Really?
This movie is just so good. Like,
Wow.
and I just sat there with just like, I wanted more. I wanted the, it. It was 2 hours long. It felt longer than 2 hours, like the span of time, but as a person who believes in God and all that, on board the minute he started telling his story, like when he's telling like his backstory as being of being a child in India, and I was just speechless, and just I was and after I did the little research, I was like, oh, why would I wish this story was true? I wish it was a true story. It'd be so
Yeah.
much better if it was. But this movie, this movie's just incredible,
Did you
and
see it in 3D?
I did not see it in 3D. I saw it in regular 2D because I saw it toward the end of its run at Providence Place. This movie is just—it's just all around excellent, and the themes in this movie, the what the character does, you know, what the character experiences, it's just breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, this is a movie I have to catch up on. At first I wasn't very interested in it, but upon recent reviews and people talking about it and nominations, it's something I have to catch up on.
I truly hope this thing wins Best Picture. This movie is that good. Like, I would seriously sit through another, you know, see another late show if I could,
Now, you know,
and see it again.
it's really a story about faith, isn't
It's
it?
about
But
faith.
it's not really a story about believing in God, essentially. It's more about having faith, right?
Well,
Or do you think
at the
it's
beginning of the movie,
very subjective?
it can be very subjective. At the very beginning, Pi, while he's telling his story, talks about the three times he's met God in his life as a child. As a Hindu, as a Christian, and as a Muslim. And his friend says, "Well, wait, how is it that you're three different, how is it that you have three different, you associate with three different religions?" And he says, "One God is many doors." And that was it. I was like, that is exactly where I kind of stand as far as like I mean, I'm a man of God myself, not like a priest or anything,
Yeah.
but I certainly believe in God, and that's always been my philosophy in life, that all these religions might could potentially all be talking about the same person.
Yeah, that sounds like something I can get behind because me being not a religious person, I definitely can get behind stories of faith. I believe in faith, you know. I believe in the power of
Then you
faith,
will love this movie.
but and what it can do. Like I said, not being a religious person, this is sounds like something I can get
Yeah,
behind.
I think this movie, I think you'd certainly love it. And then watching some featurettes on Google, on YouTube about it. That tiger, like in a bunch of these scenes, wasn't even real. That's a CGI
Right.
tiger.
Yeah.
I thought I could have sworn there's some scenes where there was an actual real tiger. Like there's a part where the tiger is chasing Pi around the boat, and it comes off the bow, and it's like swatting at him with his
Well,
paws.
there are some real,
You see, yeah,
shots.
some real shots, but for the most part, it's a CGI tiger. And I went, "What?" Yeah, Life of Pi, number one for the year,
Wow.
and I hope to God wins best picture.
Doubtful. My number one is a movie we recently talked about, and that's Zero Dark Thirty. I couldn't praise this movie enough when we reviewed it, and I cannot praise it enough right now. I said that its execution is brilliant in that it doesn't insult the material or the moviegoer. It's an extremely cathartic movie at the end. It's just a wonderful, wonderful realistic take on what it took, what the personal sacrifices this woman played by Jessica Chastain took to be able to find Bin Laden, and how at first nothing is really personally, she isn't personally invested in this, but it becomes very personal as the movie goes along, as time goes along, I should say, because this movie's told in chapters and it's told chronologically, and it's wonderfully executed, wonderfully written. I give all the credit to Mark Boal for the screenplay and Kathryn Bigelow for the execution. It's a shame she was not nominated for Best Director, even though this movie was nominated for Best Picture. However, when you nominate 9 films for Best Picture, then you're obviously going to be leaving some people pissed
Yeah.
off. But the Jessica Chastain deserves her nomination because her passion comes through, oozes through the screen. And I once again, I can't praise the movie enough in its execution, its delivery, its acting. The score is wonderfully placed. It's subtle. So yeah, Zero Dark Thirty, I think, is just the best movie of the year, and it's my number one.
Right on.
Let me go back. You had reviewed your top 10.
Yes.
My top 10. Number 10, Premium Rush. Number 9, Cabin in the Woods. Number 8, Argo. Number 7, Skyfall. Number 6, The Avengers. Number 5, Sleepless Night. Number 4, Moonrise Kingdom. Number 3, Looper. Number 2, Haywire. And number 1, Zero Dark Thirty. So based off just the two of us,
Yep.
the highest collective, I don't know, I think Looper was pretty high on
Yep.
yours, which was, what was it on yours?
See, I mentioned it. It's in my top seven after my top three. So it came
Well,
at
what did
six.
you listed it at 6, I listed it at 3. I mean, you listed Sleepless Night before Looper, right?
Yes.
So it looks like Looper is our collective highest, right?
So far.
Right now.
Yep.
So far, without Hermano, Looper is first time watcher's movie of the year.
Yeah.
We'll have to hear what he has to say, although
I have a feeling that when Hermano sends in his top 10, I have a feeling that we're going to have a very interesting first time watches movie of the year collective.
it may be Looper. Even I have a
Could still be
feeling it
Looper.
may be on his top 10.
Yeah,
He rated it pretty
I have a feeling
highly
it'll be there too.
because I think there's going to be a lot of differences in his list than our list. Anyways, movies that we didn't get a chance to see that we wish we had seen. I know I wish I had been able to see Beasts of the Southern Wild. That's got a lot of praise, and it's a movie I wish I'd been able to catch up on. Hermano has seen it. I know he said very positive things about it. But he was in a place where there was an independent theater
Yeah.
nearby, so and we haven't had that opportunity.
I wanted to see Searching for Sugar Man, which is going to be released on DVD on the 22nd. So that's actually at the top of my queue right now because I'm dying to see this. That's probably the only movie that I think that I And Amore was the other one that I really
So
wish I
here's the
could
thing
have
with
seen.
Amour. You know, it's directed by Michael Haneke, and I've already seen and I've spoken about two Michael Haneke films, and I don't know what would compel me to see another Michael Haneke film unless I want to slit my wrists. So I don't know if I want to see that movie, but now since it's been nominated for Best Picture of the year, boy, I don't know.
That was actually the reason why it moved up to the top. It was not on, my my list before, but as it since it got nominated, I was like, you know, I should probably check this out. I have some honorable mentions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Honorable mentions this year go to superhero movies. Then none of them made my top 10 because they didn't leave me with any sort of lasting impression of anything, or they didn't get me to think about things or to really appreciate what was done. You know, like the Avengers, the Dark Knight Rises. Dread is probably the king of the honorable mentions because
Surprised that didn't make your top 10.
it doesn't because I mean it's a comic book. It's a very straightforward story.
Kind of like The
Very,
Raid.
very similar to The Raid, but it's all, I mean, stuff like this happens in the comic book all the time. So, but this one was, along with the Avengers, and stuff really true to the original source material. It's basically watching an actual Dread comic book from start to finish. And Dread being my favorite comic book character, I was really happy with how this movie came out. But I mean, it's a really straightforward story. It's not going to bring anything new for me to think about. Or for me to appreciate or anything like that, the fact that they made a true to life comic book movie. So that being said, superhero movies, the lot of them made my honorable mention, along with my surprise 2012 honorable mention that I almost wanted to put in my top 10 list, but then realizing with the kind of movie that it doesn't belong in my top 10 list. But certainly, it's an honorable mention because of what it's done. Birdemic, Shock and Terror hit theaters in 2012 of this year. I have it on Blu-ray. I bought it as in the cheap bin, and it's worth mentioning that this movie, and if you haven't seen it, people, have some people over, get some liquor, drink up, and you can just rip this movie like a new one. It is,
That's the only
it's,
way to see the that
it,
kind of
it
movie,
it's
I
a,
think.
it's a, it's a movie when you want to have a bad movie night, this should be one of the movies that you watch. And I feel bad kind of hacking on it so bad because somebody wrote and directed this movie. Somebody put a lot of effort into this
So does
movie.
Uwe Boll.
This is true, but Uwe Boll is a name. This guy is nobody. You know what I mean? He's not anybody that anybody knows, you know? And there's another podcast that I listened to that actually reviewed it. And they actually did it with the actress from
Was that How Did This Get Made?
that is correct. And you can tell, like, by the way, like the way she talks about like her experience. Now, this guy actually really cared about making this movie. And what movies have I released in the theaters, other than my 48-hour film project movies? You know what I mean? None. So this guy's got something over on me. So it's worth mentioning at least that Birdemic made a theatrical release in 2012.
I would be really interested to hear what the guys at FilmSack have to say about this movie.
I would love to see these guys to hear these guys review it. I mean, the effects are bad, the acting is awful.
I've only seen clips of it, and I
The
know exactly. I agree with everything you say.
cinematography is not good, but it all gels together in a way that you just can't help laughing throughout the movie.
Sounds like Troll 2 level.
It is Troll Tool level. So yeah, those are my two. That's my honorable mentions for this year.
Some honorable mentions for me, Lincoln. Was very well done. Spielberg really brought this to life. But also, Daniel Day-Lewis is fucking incredible. I don't see how he doesn't lose to anybody nominated. I mean, I was looking for Daniel Day-Lewis. I never saw Daniel Day-Lewis. I only saw Abraham Lincoln. Amazing. I did enjoy Django Unchained despite its flaws. what else? During our review, Hermano and I had talked about it. You had not seen it, and that's The Master. And I really think that that movie is this year's Tree of Life, and how divisive it is from a critics and public sentiment, because the public, for the most part, I just don't think really get it. I really didn't get it. I didn't understand what he was going for. It was a gorgeous movie. Joaquin Phoenix is the only other actor in the in the Oscar category that is deserving to be pitted up against Daniel Day-Lewis. He was incredible. Of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman was great, but ultimately the it felt rather meandering, and I don't know what the point of it was. Other movies, Flight, I enjoyed. I thought the opening, a crash
That crashing
sequence,
was nuts.
is the best part of the movie, and it's incredibly executed. I recently I've been talking about execution a lot recently, and that's really what a lot of my top things that fall on the top of my list I praise because of execution. And is so friggin' tense, that scene, that crash
Yes.
sequence. My heart was in my throat during that scene. Everything after that, there's a lot of, now this is a very cliched movie, after that. There's although I did appreciate Denzel Washington's performance, I thought his turn at the very end of the movie really wasn't very convincing. Because there wasn't enough to back that up throughout the
Yeah.
movie. However, I thought the balance between addiction and religion was pretty well done. What else did I see that I liked? I don't know. Shit. Don't know. Nothing else really stands out to me as far as honorable mentions. The Raid, it was in your top 10. I really did enjoy great action. But yeah, I think overall pretty decent year for movies.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it took me a while to come up with my list, and I had to kind of pare it down. But I mean, there's some movies that I've seen multiple times. Like, I really enjoyed Skyfall. I saw that a couple times.
Oh, The Expendables 2 was
I saw
enjoyable.
Expendables 2 a couple of times.
Yep.
I found that movie a lot of fun. You
Yeah.
know, it was a really good throwback to 80s movies, was just off the wall.
In another movie that I really appreciated the balls that it took to create, I know you didn't appreciate it at all, was Cloud Atlas.
Yeah, I don't like that movie at all.
I know Hermano and I praised it pretty high, relatively highly. I think I had given it a B because it took a lot of balls, like I said, to create that movie.
Yeah, ultimately, no.
Anything else you guys want to mention?
That's surprisingly this year I don't have any animated movies on my list. There's usually one that makes there's usually one
Oh.
that sneaks into it every year.
Oh, Wreck-It Ralph.
Rocket Ralph was good,
I
but
really liked Wreck-It Ralph a lot. I thought that was a lot of fun, and the voice acting was really well done.
I mean, Wreck Ralph was good, yeah, but I mean, is it top 10 worthy for me?
Honorable mention?
I don't mention maybe. I mean,
Okay.
it was there. I mean, it was fun to watch and it was enjoyable. Same thing goes with Pirates Band
Oh,
of Misfits.
Brave. I loved Brave. That was a very good movie, I thought.
Pirates Band of Misfits is another one that almost made it, but on reanalyzing my list, I was like, well, it didn't really give me anything, out of it. Brave, congrats on Disney for giving girls a Disney princess doesn't need a prince. But shame on them for not giving them a bad guy to fight. You
Well,
know what I mean?
I thought that she was a badass character.
She's a badass character, but she doesn't have to do anything with
I
it.
thought she had
You
plenty
know,
to do.
it's you know, and that was kind of disappointing on that. Yeah, so animated movies, I'm surprised, none of them made none of them made my top 10. That was the other thing I thought was also worth mentioning. I mean, there's also some utter garbage movies like Mirror Mirror, which I saw.
Oh, I'm
Over,
sorry.
it was one of those DVD watches. Just kind of like, oh, I forgot to mismanage Miss Q, and end up watching it. I was like, what the hell is this? Well,
Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter,
again,
worst movie of the
that's
year.
another swing and a miss because it could have been so good.
No, it couldn't have
It could
been.
have been so much fun.
There was no way this movie could have been good.
It could have been good. It could have been a
It
lot of
was
fun.
terrible. It
If
was
they if they if
worthless.
they kept the vampire if they
Garbage.
kept the vampire fighting up a little bit
If they
more.
didn't film this movie at all, it would have been much better.
As opposed to
Go
the
listen to our review.
2.5 hours of C-SPAN that is that is Abraham Lincoln,
Yeah.
or as I like to call it, the 13th Amendment.
Yeah, that brought us one of the better scenes of the year, where the guy just while they're in house, they just say, "How
How dare
dare
you?
you?"
You know what? Wish I'm gonna get a sound clip of that. We're gonna use that for like when there's like a great dissension of opinion on this show. Just gonna cut to the how dare you, and then go right back to the podcast.
That's funny.
So yeah, that's pretty much, I mean, everything that's been worth mentioning for this year in movies. Life of Pi, man. I can't even. I like just look at my list. My list again. Just realizing how long Seven Psychopaths was actually on my list until I saw Life of Pi. That was. I mean, that came out of nowhere on me. So, I mean, this movie has been a great. Has been a great year for movies. Lots of good
You
stuff to
say with
watch.
raised hands.
I do with raised hands. It's a great year for movies, people. I'm hoping that 2010 is just as good.
Hopefully, and we may do a part of an episode in the future where we talk about our anticipated
I
movies.
believe we will.
Okay,
That'd be
that.
a great way to addition to our Oscar nomination episode.
Yeah, it would be. Or maybe when we revisit the top 10 with Romano.
That must be good too.
Yeah.
Best, most
Very
anticipated.
good. Okay, that does it for this episode of the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find us on Facebook by searching First Time Watchers. We post movie news and updates that we think you would be interested in. And you can email us at firsttimewatchers@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at 1sttimewatchers at twitter.com and at Tumblr, Tim.
firsttimewatchers.tumblr.com.
Thank you.
Please download our episodes on iTunes and feel free to leave a review. Any feedback is greatly appreciated. If you have any suggestions of movies for us to watch, send a tweet, an email, or post on our Facebook page. Or send us your own top tens. We may
We'll read them
find
on, we'll, why
something.
not, we'll read them on the air.
Yeah, we may find something in your top 10 that three of us haven't seen, so
Exactly.
we might review it. Stay tuned for our next episode. We will try to catch up with Romano in his top 10 of 2012, and then. Which will then allow us to name the FTW's film of the year and
Exactly.
also probably discuss other interesting movies.
Yes, because movies are interesting, and we are the First Time Watchers podcast, and we like to watch.
Good movies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.